Welcome to the Agent's Angle as we continue to look into the agent's world with an increasing amount of bewilderment as it gets more confusing week by week, with this week seemingly being no exception. I'm Jonathan Booker.
And I'm Peter Palaiologos. In the week when the second new FIFA Football Agents exam has been set potentially by more than 10,000 candidates and is the last before the scheduled implementation of FIFA's new agent regulations, we'll look at how the exam went for some and also some of the problems encountered by candidate agents around the world.
All that and more confusion and farce besides to come on this rather bewildering episode of The Agent's Angle. Peter, I get the feeling this is going to be a challenging episode, not least for us. Having replanned this episode four or five times over the last week due to the ever-changing football agent world, some may say we've changed more times than a chameleon in an art gallery.
Yeah, we weren't intending to focus too much on this exam, maybe briefly, but what's eventuated really in terms of this exam going ahead pretty much yesterday and a little bit the day before in terms around the world due to the different time zones. We've seen there's been different experiences around the world by agents or candidates who sat the exam. Big issues like platform problems, internet issues, hotspots, and also how the exam questions sort of panned out. All these issues have been raised, and a lot of agents through WhatsApp and through other means have got in contact with us to discuss not just their concerns, but the challenges they face with this exam.
Yes, I was stunned, if not actually saddened, as news started to emerge. Well, it was yesterday, being Wednesday morning UK time, from those sitting in the Eastern Hemisphere and Asia and Oceania sitting the exam, that there were
always the first.
Yeah, that there were problems with the exam. You might be the first, but the fact is you're not immune to these problems. And then yesterday in the afternoon and evening, I started to hear and see reports that the exam was beset with problems in parts of Europe, most notably here in England, where I understand the English FA actually sent out an email somewhere around 9 or 10 o'clock last night, apologising to candidates who sat the exam that day for the various issues at the sitting they experienced and the problems therein. This is not to say every country and National Football Association had problems with the exam. In fact, some have been openly complimented by candidates on how well it was managed by their host association. However, those FAs have been, from my perspective, those with fewer candidates sitting the exam at their venues. In terms of the first sitting of this new agents exam back in April this year, I think we can all give FIFA and the National Associations a bit of leeway, as it was the first of its kind and there were likely to be some teething problems. However, for something so important due to the impending implementation date of the FFAR, the FIFA Football Agent Regulations, they should have been better prepared, in my opinion, both FIFA and some of the national associations hosting these exams. I don't think with the combination of IT issues and exam conditions, anything will be faultless. But where were the contingency plans and what were they, if they had any?
Yeah, look, I've been getting a lot of feedback in terms of different countries, especially in this side of the world where I'm based in Asia and Oceania and Australia. And just anecdotally, the exam was delayed in Qatar due to Wi-Fi issues. Australia, even Bulgaria and Czech Republic in your neck of the woods in Europe, there were platform issues. A lot of candidates were ready to go, but unfortunately, either the internet was poor or the platform didn't work. Then I got some feedback that some questions were very similar to the last exam. Some candidates who took the exam in April also had very, very similar questions this time around. But there were also concerns from examinees in China and also a lot of some of the Arab association, including Qatar, that the English in the exam, most of them took in English, not French or Spanish, was quite difficult because obviously it's a regulatory exam and they found the English quite difficult. And it is always hard. We've got to recognize that if you're coming from those countries, a lot of candidates may just have high school standard English, maybe a bit higher, but this is a regulatory exam. A lot of agents reached out and asked for more local arrangements. They're a bit concerned that if they don't get it through this exam, what happens to their business post 1 October? And quite a few are thinking of approaching their federation. And this is not just because of the internet issue, the language issues, but in terms of they've got players, they've got deals about following the Italian maybe and the French path, where at least they do national deals within their association space. These are some of the concerns anecdotally that's come to me from WhatsApp, from emails, and from chats from various agents.
I've had a similar experience with various phone calls I've had, and as you said, instant messaging and emails. Now, with regards to all these reported issues, we do our best to verify them and sort them out and find out how reliable they are. And they are reported issues and problems. We have to point out that some of these may be true or some may be slightly exaggerated. We weren't there, but we know others who were. So what better way to get a true insight on the experiences of sitting the second of the new FIFA football agents exams than speaking to some people who were there as exam candidates?
Yes, our first exam candidate is from Asia, and in particular Indonesia, which I believe in future will be a huge market, country of over 200 million, fanatical about football. Yeah, let's get our first candidate on board. Jonathan, before we go into the interviews, I just want to make it clear to all our listeners that we're putting a disclaimer here, as several of the candidates we're interviewing from Asia, Africa, and also from the UK have not received their results. We are either using a nickname to identify them, or we are using the initial or another name.
We're going to introduce our guest candidate from Indonesia. Nat, how are you?
I'm fine, Peter. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for coming on to the podcast at such short notice, especially after the FIFA exam. Now, you sat the exam a day or two ago in Indonesia. I assume Jakarta, is that right?
Was in Jakarta, yes.
How did you find the exam process, including the environment, in terms of how the exam was set up by the National Football Federation of Indonesia? I think it's called PSSI.
For me, the exam process from the beginning, I found it quite interesting, actually. It's kind of like a back to my uni life. And for the environment itself, I think I can say I'm quite proud with our federation, how they manage it. Actually, they set it at a Hotel Sultan Jakarta. This hotel is actually very well known for all the national team. And they set up in one of the meeting rooms, which is very calm, very good for us as candidates to focus on our exam. The exam starting by 4 p.m., but we have to arrive by 2:30 p.m. because we have to re-register. And then after that, we have to pay on cash for the exam fee. And then they set us a buffet of coffee break for all the candidates because there is a gap like almost 2 hours from 2:30 into 4. They provide Wi-Fi very well, so we don't need to worry about the local technical issue or whatever. And then they're very strict with the rules. We have to like respect their rules. One more thing that I think is too restricted is the PSSI want us for one table, only one person. It's actually really, really like I'm going to final test again for my uni, you know?
Yes.
I think the highlight for me is after the exam, they put us on a dinner set all together, all the candidates. So this is, I think, is very important for us because in the end, you know, finally, we all agents from I don't know how many years, we never see each other in person anymore. So 2 days ago, we finally can catch up to each other. I think after all, I'm quite proud with my federation to setting this exam very well.
Peter.
That's my personal experience.
Peter, I think we're both thinking the same thing here. Maybe we should register with the Indonesian FA and be registered through there, because that sort of welcome and that sort of hospitality is lacking in so many other countries when it comes to agents. So I can definitely tell Nat why you're so proud of your FA with how they've handled it.
Can I edit something else?
Yes.
There is one candidate actually from Holland who joined us. So the story is he failed at the first exam, but then later at the second batch, he decided to join at Indonesia exam. So I was comparing also, I was going on in Malaysia, in Holland, and then in Singapore.
The exam itself, the questions, did you find anything surprising? Was it on the football regulations and the RSTP, or was it a mix of questions? Did you find them too legal? What was your view on the questions asked?
Actually, it's more into legal. I'm quite surprised about that. I may say it's not an easy exam at all. Because the thing is, it's an open book exam, but it's almost 700 pages as it's only in English. So this may be going to be difficult for a country that is not speaking native English at all. Yes, we are able to use like, what is it they call DeepL, which is like a Google Translate. But it took a longer time for us to understand everything. And for 1 hour, 20 questions, we need to be passed, we have to answering 15 questions. So it's going to be very interesting and it's not going to be easy for anyone. I'm talking about anyone that is maybe in the industry for a long time. They still find it very not easy, I may say.
You mentioned Malaysia, Singapore, and Indonesia. Do you think the license, the new FIFA license, is going to change the way the agent industry operates in Southeast Asia generally?
I hope so, because this means the football agent is no longer an option. But as FIFA now seems to be serious, football agent to become a priority in this industry, officially approved by FIFA, and it must be, hopefully, all the member association gonna very respect with this new rules by FIFA. I think this gonna change the game in Asia.
Nat, just in terms of yourself, what are your aspirations as an Indonesian football agent, not just in terms of Indonesia, but across Asia and internationally? What are your aspirations going forward?
Okay, I think I may start as an Indonesian agent. My aspiration, I want to see many more young Indonesian players, both men and women, willing to compete and achieve their career outside Indonesia. I use the words of willing, is the opportunity is there, but very sadly, but I think some of them, they're not ready. So hopefully we as an agent, Indonesian agent, we can bring them and then show our knowledge that it's better for you guys as a young talent to get experience outside more, then come back, join the national team, become better.
I think that's the important thing that a lot of people miss out on with the role of an agent, and it is that mentoring, that sort of guidance from the likes of yourselves. When is the right time for those players to make that move to, shall we say, spread their wings and look worldwide or across the continent for opportunities? I think that's vitally important.
Yes. And then, again, I'm not only an Indonesian agent, but I also a woman in this football industry. Especially Indonesia, I would like to one day more women to deal in this business, you know, in Indonesia especially. And then I would like one day also the stigma that just because we are a woman, we don't know what we are doing in this business is removed completely. Because this is just sport business is business, you know, in general, it's a competitive business. So let's just compete regardless of gender, ethnicity, language, background, just compete in a fair way. That's my inspiration in the future.
Thank you so much for that. We actually had an episode on women's football agents with Swedish agent, episode 5, I think, Maria Carlson de Checo. So very good episode. Please check that out.
I will.
That's a very important point because in Asia, it's a little bit different. And having worked in Asia, the dynamics that this is the other thing. I mean, a lot of the European maybe agents don't understand the dynamics that happen in the Asian football industry and the way that agents work. I think you would agree with that, Nat.
Yes, because some information also that I got is Singapore 2 days ago, but still there's no female who joined. Malaysia also no female joined. Indonesia is only 2, including myself. Hopefully also for all the women is I would like to encourage themselves as just join is fine.
Fantastic. Thank you. Jonathan, any final thoughts?
No, nothing from me, Peter. I just want to thank Nat for coming on and spending the time with us and sharing her experience from the exam. And of course, wish you all the best with the result. Hopefully it goes the way you want it to.
Hopefully.
And all the best for your future.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. See you soon.
Thank you.
See you soon, Peter. Bye.
I think, Peter, what Nat highlighted there is a very poignant point. And that is the thing to consider with the candidates in Asia, is that they are arguably amongst the ones most disadvantaged with the FIFA agents exam. As despite many of them being multilingual, they may not be fully conversant in one of the 3 primary languages that the exam is available in, and also the supporting documents from FIFA. And I think I'm justified in saying these documents aren't the clearest even in English, and they are open to quite a bit of interpretation, which when combined with some ambiguous questions and a time limit to answer the questions, it must be really, really difficult for some of the candidates from Asia. But other regions where similar issues are prevalent is Africa and South America, especially with Brazil, reportedly with many candidates, but the exam not in their primary language either.
Yeah, that's correct. Brazil's pretty much Portuguese. Many would understand Spanish, but as you said, it's not their primary language. Also, Nat raised another interesting point, and that was that some agents from other countries took the exam, for instance, in Indonesia, a Dutch agent in English. I know from Australia, we had a Japanese agent take the exam in English in Sydney. So we are seeing some agents from other countries attend exams, not in the domestic country, but in another country, especially if it's in English. Now we'll turn to Africa and a candidate who took the exam a day or two ago. Name is Demi, and we'll go to Demi's interview with us just now.
Welcome, Demi.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for making time available. You sat the exam close to 2 days ago. Can you just give us a bit of a background of how the exam was conducted in Nigeria, how many candidates, and what was the environment like in terms of the setup?
The exam process started with the 2 days for accreditation. It was well organized. I have to be truthful. It was done on the 18th and 19th for 2 days. Accreditation lasted for like 10 to 15 minutes. The examination environment was quite serene and conducive. But just like any other exam, we have two candidates on a seat, enough space between the two. The invigilators were strict. That is normal. So everything went well.
You mentioned accreditation. So for 2 days, they had to assess the examinees and then they would be able to sit the exam. So there was a bit of a process where each candidate was, I suppose, vetted. Is that right in Nigeria?
Yes.
Was any reason for that the Federation gave?
Yeah, you know, it's normal for the accreditation. You have to come to the NFF office for them to check your photo ID, the one you use in registration, whether it corresponds to you yourself, so that we don't have people impersonating another person.
Now, the exam itself, the platform, the Wi-Fi, that all worked well from what you're telling me?
Yeah, the exam itself, compared to the last exam, because I wrote the last exam, I couldn't make it. Compared to the last exam, I think there's 95% improvement. Personally, I was affected by the hotel network in April. The network wasted my time a little bit. But this time around, there was no issue at all.
How'd you find the exam questions? You mentioned you sat the previous exam. Was it a similar type or was it a little bit different in terms of the scenarios or the structure, or was it more regulatory? How'd you find the difference between April and the one you sat a couple of days ago?
You know, based on my experience, because the last exam and the preparation I made in the last exam was not as comprehensive as now, because, you know, once we fail an exam once, you know where you make mistake. I have to prepare it very well. So I think I was able to interpret it better than the last exam. So nothing changes. It just depends on your understanding, how you can interpret the questions. So some people, maybe the new intakes, they might find it difficult a little bit. But we just start for the last exam to expect. So we are fully prepared.
I think, Demi, both Peter and I will agree. The best agents probably pass the second time around because you have more appreciation for the work that you have to put into it and understanding. You become more appreciative of the documentation and what you need to know. I'll be quite honest, I didn't pass first time. I passed second time of sitting the exam. So I think that leaves in good stead. But with regards to after the exam, what was the general feedback from the other candidates? Did they share your view? It sounds like a really strict, really well-run process. Did they share that opinion or was there a different opinion? Did some people experience problems or was it generally all pretty good?
Nobody complained about the network. It was good. In terms of the questions, generally in exam, the exam, if you are prepared enough, you won't have cause to complain. But people will do complain. Maybe if you are not prepared enough and you find the exam quite challenging or the understanding is not that good, you will always complain about the questions. So there are diverse opinions. But to me, the complaint was not that much.
Demi, by being based in Africa, do you think the FIFA agents exam, the new license now that's coming in, is going to change the way football agency business is going to be done in Africa, in your region?
Everybody has to be on the same page now, because everybody realizes now that it's no more business as usual. So you have to pass this exam if you want to continue working as an agent. And again, we have many big agents that has been in this business for a long time. Mostly people that has been working as an intermediary. So they know if you don't pass this exam now, you cannot continue working as an agent. So everybody has to be on board.
My last question for you, Demi, as a Nigerian or African agent, what are your aspirations for the future in the business?
Wow, my aspirations, I want to be able to export football talents globally because there's abundance of talent in Africa. And I want to be able to give opportunities to good players to showcase their talents and make a living for themselves.
Demi, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. It is very much appreciated and giving us an insight as to what happened with the exam in Nigeria. We hope very much that you get the result that you want from the exam and wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And we've seen from Asia and Africa, or Nigeria and Indonesia to be specific, we've seen two different agent experiences in taking the exam. However, both seem to be very well organized. A lot of hospitality in Indonesia. With Nigeria, we've seen a candidate who had to resit the exam and really was determined to pass it. But before we turn our attention to Europe, and in particular England, I had another anecdote that came across my table, and it was from Czech Republic. And one of the examinees there mentioned the fact that the venue that the Czech FA set up didn't have Wi-Fi. They actually had to set up their own hotspots, the hotspot from their phone, and then put that phone away in their bag or below the desk. That's a quite an interesting anecdote. No Wi-Fi in the Czech Republic exam.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of comments coming in from quite a few of the European nations, and that might surprise a few people that some of the European nations aren't as prepared to host these exams as we would hope. And just one of those is actually England with the English FA. And the
exam... home country.
Yes, and it doesn't fill me with a lot of pride with some of the stuff that's coming out. And with this second exam, it's not held in London, it's actually held in Birmingham, which is not far from where I'm based. However, it is worth considering that England probably had the most candidates sitting the exam. So the combined voices of any such complaints will obviously be louder. And also, some of the English media are focused on this topic and the matter of the exam. And they were very quick to report on the problems, such as the likes of the largely reliable Athletic, the Telegraph, and the Mail being the ones who first responded to this. Others have followed on afterwards. But again, we're not going to put words into anyone's mouth on this. And again, we're going to turn to another candidate who sat the exam in England, in Birmingham.
And we're going to turn to our candidate guest from England who took the exam. And I want to ask you, Matthew, welcome to the show first.
Thank you.
Appreciate you making time available. Birmingham, England, 20 September 2023, the FIFA Agents Exam hosted by the English FA. What was the environment like in the organisation of the exam itself?
Well, when we got there, we were told to get there for 11 for the registration, and that went well. I understood from the first exam, they only had four from the FA. For this exam, doing the registration, they had about 12. They had six either side, and it was very quick. You went in, showed your ID, you got your ticket number that would marry up with a table number, and that was seamless. Because the only flag that I raised that we did have waiting was we had paparazzi there. So, wow. I thought that was interesting.
Fascinating. In terms of the exam itself, how was it operated? How did it start on time? What happened?
You got the first inclination that something was awry. Round about 12:30, they were telling you to obviously log in, put in your Wi-Fi password code, all of that, and just have the FIFA agent platform open. And you could just hear the ripple effect that some could, some couldn't. And then they were saying, yeah, we know we're experiencing some Wi-Fi problems. Anyone got a problem, put their hand up. Now, we were pretty much with half an hour to go and about 700 people, literally everyone to a man or woman has put their hand up. So then you think, okay, you're not going to be able to walk around. You're now getting to 12:45, 1:00. They're making announcements on a big PA system. So it felt like a bit of a Jerry Springer convention where you just had a guy with a microphone bellowing out to everyone. Yeah, we're aware there's a problem. The exam won't be starting on time. We've got Wi-Fi issues. And it just had a knock-on effect of everyone thinking, well, how can you have Wi-Fi issues? Before you know it, it's 12:15. They're reiterating, exam's not going to start on time. We have notified the NEC Arena. And then they tried to calm it by saying, if you can get on, start the exam. If you can't, don't worry, your hour hasn't started. So, of course, by this stage, some people could get on. So you had pockets around you that were doing the exam, but the majority couldn't. I eventually got on at 1:30. So I know it sounds odd, but when you've got an hour, there's a difference with those 2 minutes. And then I sort of got in the zone. I could try and disassociate myself, but 1:45, 1:50, it crashed. So now, hand goes up. Pretty promptly, Bod from the FA comes over and he's refreshing. He's doing this, doing that. But unbeknown to me, and obviously then everyone else, your clock doesn't stop. Now, we were told before that FIFA would be aware if something like that happened and they would internally shut your clock. And as soon as you refresh and go back on, the clock would come back up. It didn't. It just didn't. So I think I lost anywhere between 7 and 10 minutes, hoping that my answers had been saved. And you don't get that time back. Now, when you've sat a load of exams, and they might be 3 hours, 10 minutes isn't anything. When you're sitting one exam with 20 questions for an hour, you know mathematically in your head you've got roughly 3 minutes. Some you can do quick. Others that have got a bit more detail or a bit of a calculation in, you're thinking, okay, I need to take my time here. However, that sort of glossed over what then happened. Felt like around about 2 o'clock-ish, FA came on, because now you had candidates that were at the front of the building that had just walked up with their laptop to go and speak to an FA bod. So you're not meant to move. You certainly shouldn't be walking around with your laptop or conversing with people. I mean, I've just never been in an exam room like that. With that, FA guy comes on and he goes, okay, there is an issue. We have been notified. You can use your hotspots. Now, rule number one is no mobile devices on your desk. Rule number two was you can have a laptop, not an iPad or anything. I'd exaggerate if I said everyone did it, but out of 700, I'd be confident, say 350 to 400, all went in their bags, all got their phones, all put their hotspots on. And now you're thinking, now it's getting a little bit wonky because you've already got people up talking. He hasn't started. I'm halfway through. Your system's crashed. And matey boy's connected to his hotspot about 4 rows over to me on the right-hand side. This person literally had a hoodie, put their AirPods in. That's a big no-no. Pulled their hood up and started to speak to someone. And whilst you couldn't hear, you're thinking, you must just be reading the questions out to someone. You've got other people. They were opening up other search engines. Now, we were told that what you could have open on your laptop was the exam and the FIFA study material, which is a 693-page document. And that's it. So in your head, you're thinking you're going to have people every now and then walking around and just checking you've got two windows open. Well, because you've got people on their phones, people standing up, people talking, people not doing the exam, they couldn't monitor or what I would say invigilate it. All of the FA bods were at the front trying to sort out tech issues. You had people that were all the way back. I was roughly in the middle. There's probably another 400 behind me. But you couldn't tell that there were FA bods that way because people had just migrated to the front. You then hear afterwards that you had other people that were just either cutting and pasting the question and emailing it to someone to get the answers. It was just unfettered. It was like the Wild West. It didn't feel like an exam. It didn't feel like it had the pressure that it should have done because they almost got a pass by not having the Wi-Fi. It was almost like, we don't know what to do. Use your hotspots.
Wow. I mean, taking the exam, knowing that people started before you, other people trying to get their tech issues, it's very distracting. I mean, you only got 1 hour and you've got all this chaos around you that just throws you off. Subsequent to the exam, has anyone updated the candidates about what the next steps are?
So Wednesday night, I had an email from the FA, which was bizarre because you could email them prior to the exam and you wouldn't get anything back sometimes. I've got to say that they're slightly better than FIFA. FIFA, during the process of when you registered for the exam and then have paid the fee, if you have any other issues, you can raise what's called a support ticket, a bit like going to your Tesco's meat counter. You pull a ticket out and you're waiting for your number to be heard. Well, if it was a piece of meat, it would be rancid. So they just don't get back. And if they do, they just tick it and say, yes, we've reviewed it. They don't answer it. And I asked you a question, Peter. Yes, at exactly 9 o'clock on the Wednesday, pretty much 7 hours after the exam, I had an email from the FA player status team. Thank you for attending today's FIFA football agent exam at the Birmingham NEC. We acknowledge that there were technical issues which may have impacted the ability of some candidates to complete the assessment. The FA fully recognises the importance of the exam to all candidates and apologises to anyone that was affected. The FA is investigating the cause of the issues with the venue and liaising with FIFA on appropriate next steps for individuals that were impacted. We will provide a further update as soon as possible. Haven't heard since. And of course, when there's 700 of you, you're pretty much connected in some way. Yeah, then the jungle drums start beating. You're hearing that there's going to be a reset. I don't know how you're going to organise 700 people to do a resit before effectively the 1st of October. That doesn't seem feasible. You've got 2 weekends in between. Geographically, who's paying for it? I don't know. I've heard nothing from FIFA, who at the end of the day are the governing body. They're the one that put on the exam. I think they're going to kick the can down the road to the FA because they were the MA that were invigilating it. Did they get permission from FIFA to say you can use the hotspot? Who knows? You're listening to an invigilator saying you can use a hotspot, but part of your brain says, well, you're not allowed that. They were very clear. If we see you on your phone or any device or talking, we will let you continue taking the exam. But as soon as you walk out, we will tell you that you've been disqualified.
The exam questions themselves, as a lawyer with legal skills as well as an agent, how did you find the questions? Were they legal? Were they thematic? Were they regulatory? Were they scenario? What was the mix of questions like?
It was odd because you're only as good as looking at maybe their past exam. So I didn't sit the first one. So the April one was definitely loaded with FIFA football agent regulations and the regulations on the status and transfer of players, RSTP. And there was various courses that were available to go on to help you pass the exam. And through contacts and everyone, that was still pretty much, you're going to get 12 to 15 questions on those two. And then there was, the rest would be dispersed. I didn't have that. I wasn't top heavy on FAR. I wasn't top heavy on RSTP. I had only about, say only, I was grateful, about 4 or 5 that were select one or more. The rest of them were select one. But when you know there's one definitive answer, it's a lot easier than thinking, is it 2, is it 3, is it 4, or none. I had no questions on training compensation, no questions on solidarity mechanism. I had one question on the service fee. Now, there are 3 main changes that historically they're trying to bring in. Bringing in a new cohort of agents, that would be their primary, let's try to get the candidates to understand what they need to do moving forward. But maybe that's my legal head that kicks in. That didn't happen. I had safeguarding. Now, that's important, and I'm not underplaying that. But people that sat the exam in April didn't have that 100-page document. And yet you're telling me in 6 months they've realised, well, we better put a safeguarding element in. So they've just added to what you had to read. I had 2 safeguarding questions. They're common sense questions. They're not factual. They're not legal. In April, because obviously people talk, someone had 4 questions on solidarity. How can you have 20% of your exam on just one? He's constantly on the calculator. And then you've got someone there that hasn't got any.
There's been very limited transparency on the questions, how they're chosen, how they're weighted, so on and so forth. And I think I've said it numerous times before on the podcast that it's a case of the intention is good, but the execution is dreadful.
Great.
For me, there's a question now over the whole FFAR, not only in England, but worldwide, because if these candidates from this exam are offered a resit, does that mean candidates in other regions are offered a resit? Because that brings into question the integrity. Yeah. If people pass from this exam and people in other regions say, well, this was going on and that was going on, well, draws into question the integrity. So if you've got somebody who's abided by the rules, taken the right approach, pass, it's then unfair on them. And as you've rightly pointed out, we've got a very limited time span. With that, I'd like to thank you very much for your time and coming on the podcast. Peter, I'll share my words. We wish you all the best with the result, and we hope the result comes out right for you.
Thank you very much, gents.
Thank you so much.
Well, after that, Peter, I really don't know what to say. After the largely positive feedback that we had from Demi and Nat of their experiences with their agent exams and the praise their respective member associations seem to deserve, I'm stunned by what happened in England. In fact, I will go as far to say I'm not just stunned, but I'm absolutely embarrassed by the FA and wholeheartedly disappointed for all those candidates who wanted to sit the exam and approach it in the right way like Matthew did. I think I've said to you in the past, and also said to others privately, but I will say it publicly now. When I got my agent's license way back, even before FIFA abandoned the agent's license in 2015, I was proud of the achievement. And to be an FA licensed agent was, in my eyes, the icing on the cake. A seemingly renowned FA, widely respected, arguably looked up to by other FAs as setting standards. And back then, also a football association that led the way in terms of agent regulation issues. And just one of those was TPO, third-party ownership. The FA had TPO regulations in place well before FIFA or any others. Maybe I was looking through rose-tinted glasses at that time, excited and infused at a new career ahead in the sport that I love. And no doubt that enthusiasm is the same for other newly licensed agents now and those, hopefully, who will get positive results this week. However, over the years, a lot of water has passed under the bridge in terms of my association with the English FA. A lot of people have moved on. And whether that is me as an agent or as a representative of now two agent associations with the AFA, the Association of Football Agents, and SOFIA, the Society of Football Intermediaries and Agents, and was invited by the FA to consult and advise on their own regulations and processes. However, it's safe to say that that relationship has eroded to a point where I have absolutely no faith in them on the regulations, which I can confidently say has been replicated in the feelings shared by many others. Now, some of those reasons I won't go into because as far as I'm aware, there is still an investigation ongoing. Not an investigation into me, I hasten to add. So whilst I'm hugely saddened, embarrassed and annoyed by what we heard from Matthew there, along with some of the other reports we're getting from the English agents exam this week, sadly, I'm not surprised at what I would say is the complacency demonstrated by the FA in England.
It's very hard to fathom for English agents what I'm hearing, and it's a pity what happened in England. I don't know who's responsible, but I'm sure there's going to be some outcome with this, especially when we take into account the USA. The Federation there had 300 examinees in Chicago, and the feedback that I've got from some of my colleagues or associates was very well organized. Also, India, the FA had the exam there. They actually, I think, put a media release out saying went very well, and also thanking FIFA for helping organizing that second exam in India. So that is an interesting dimension there. I understand your frustration with the FA and with the regulations. That's a little bit of a harsh call because in a future episode, we will be looking at the National Football Agent Regulations of England. And I actually do like a few of them, the add-ons, I would say, the amendments are the layers they're adding onto the FA regulations for agents. However, that is a discussion for another time.
There's one thing at this point, Peter, that we've got to establish some clarity on. And that was in reference to the exam in the Czech Republic and the use of hotspots there. And that seems to be quite different to the example we heard in England where hotspots were used. In the Czech Republic, candidates were told to put them away and out of sight. We haven't established that from the English exam. Now, to most people, a hotspot will be their mobile phone, which under the FIFA exam regulations is banned, and tethering that to create a personal hotspot. Whereas to others, it is a mobile hotspot device that some may refer to as a mobile router or a dongle even. But FIFA are very definitive in this. And FIFA's definition of a hotspot in the FIFA exam regulations is, and I quote, a mobile modem used to connect to the internet wirelessly via a mobile network with a data-only SIM card as a standalone modem or a part of the device that is not considered a prohibited item. So to FIFA's credit in this instance, that does seem to clarify very clearly what a hotspot is. And it is not a mobile phone, which can be connected to Bluetooth devices such as earbuds to communicate with a third party in an exam, both of which, earbuds and mobile phones, are clearly listed by FIFA in the same exam rules as prohibited items for the FIFA agent exam. A key thing for me, Peter, in this process, as well as consistency, is fairness. We want the best people for the industry. Yes, those with the right professional and ethical values, but those with the knowledge. One candidate shouldn't have an advantage over another based on where they sit the exam or who they are. And likewise, another candidate for me shouldn't be disadvantaged because of the likes of technical issues or problems with the exam process, or even the faults of others. So shouldn't questions be asked when we see photos on social media inside exam rooms, photos of exam screens with actual agent exam questions on? After all, phones are amongst other things that are banned from the exam. And that's in FIFA's published document detailing the FIFA football agent exam rules. Now, are these being consistently and fairly applied between these different member associations who are hosting the exams? Also, are the rules being viewed as appropriate? And how are FIFA actually ensuring consistency between the different exam locations?
This is a difficult area because you're relying on the national associations to provide invigilators, people who undertake to set out the exam and to monitoring all the candidates who are sitting. Now, anecdotally, what's come from, I think it was 157 different national associations who had exams on, there is an issue of fairness because we're getting different messages from different associations. Some African associations went well, some Europeans it didn't, some in Asia was a very much a mixed bag. But fairness has to apply to all candidates to have an equal opportunity. We mentioned earlier a little bit about language. Does disadvantage a lot of candidates? Also, if there is a delay in the exam and candidates get anxious, they have to wait an hour, they're getting nervous, they're thinking about the exam, that can put people off, especially when you need to get 75%. So these issues all relate to fairness and we want to see a fair playing field.
Peter, we can all dwell on the errors and the mistakes from this second of the new FIFA agent exams. And it's easy for everyone to actually look back and focus on the ifs and the buts, but it doesn't necessarily help those affected, does it? This needs rectifying, and it needs rectifying quickly. It leaves people's careers, futures and livelihoods in doubt. Now, there simply isn't enough time for a reset due to various financial and logistical considerations. When this pod goes out, there will only be roughly 7 days before the new FIFA football agent regulations is scheduled to be implemented in full. And that's 7 days. Are people going to be compensated? And if so, by whom? Is it going to be FIFA, the FA, or even the venue in the case of Birmingham? But that is really cold comfort. Because as I said, in little over a week's time, some of these people may not have a FIFA license. Through no fault of their own, they won't be able to undertake agency activity. And if they do, they face a possible ban from FIFA for even sitting a future FIFA agent exam.
Yeah, Jonathan, I understand your commentary there because you've got two competing tensions. You mentioned the English National Football Agents Regulations, which probably come in, depending on the Rule K arbitration in England, by the 30th of September and what's going to happen there. And then you've got this FIFA exam issue, which looks like it's taken its toll on a lot of agents who sat, or intermediaries as well, who sat the exam in England because of the technical issues and just whatever came out of that exam. So really, time is of the essence. And I agree with you. The impact felt by a lot of the candidates whose businesses are on the line if they don't pass, or is it going to be a reset? Also, they've got to adjust the national football agent regulations. I've had a look at the draft, and we'll talk about that, as I mentioned earlier, but there's a few changes there that are very much into compliance. So agents have a lot of pressure. There's going to be a big impact on livelihoods going forward. As you mentioned, there could be some panic and desperation, not just for the new agents or intermediaries who wanted to get their license to be certified, but established intermediaries and established agencies who've got a lot of intermediaries or independent intermediaries don't get a license, their livelihood and also the business will be affected. So I think overall there are a lot of concerns there. And you're right, considering it's England, your home country, I would be a little bit worried and frustrated.
There seems to be still a lack of understanding, as you said there, the practicalities. And I think from the football governance authorities, there's not a true understanding of how agents work, how different agents are, whether they work for an agency or whether they work independent, and the size of the agencies and their approaches. Everybody's different in some way, shape or form. In terms of solutions, I think I'm safe in saying there's no bulletproof resolution to this, as someone somewhere is going to be disappointed or even end up at a loss, whether it be financial or professional. But there's a lot of ideas flowing around. There's a lot of rumours of resets and things like that, but I can't see that being realistic. Now, I'm going to put myself out there to be shot at again, but here goes. And this is something I'd like your feedback on, and no doubt other people will comment. Is it feasible in this situation that, one, FIFA allow for the currently registered intermediaries an additional 6 months acting under RWWI, the intermediary regulations, and the new FFAR, in which time they get another opportunity to sit the agent's exam? The exam in Birmingham, and this is a contentious one, the exam in Birmingham is voided and all candidates are reimbursed fully for any costs incurred. Now, we're hearing rumours of people who flew into that exam in Birmingham to sit the exam in England who've come from other countries. I've heard Italy mentioned, and they are offered free of charge a resit at a location of their choice next year. Now, if they're registered intermediaries under point one, that won't affect them so badly. Now, for this, there's going to be cost. It's up to FIFA, the FA, and the venue to sort out who foots the bill. I don't care who sorts out the bill. It's the candidates have got to be the priority here. And besides, the first two in that list have enough money sloshing around. And three, any candidate elsewhere in the world who experienced the same or similar problems as in England is afforded those same benefits. Now, as I said, I openly accept these ideas are not faultless and won't please some people, but there seems very, very few options available. Not least, there will be problems over the validity of contracts with clients signed up to representation agreements in the last 9 months. Do they come under RWWI? Do they come under FFAR? And that's where your expertise comes in with a legal background to look at that. FIFA aren't going to scrap these regulations after all the money they've spent on lawyers and legal challenges and fighting the various challenges to FFAR, which is still ongoing. And we know there are some very strong, dare I say, hawks, either in Zurich or elsewhere in the football community, who are hell-bent on getting the FFAR implemented in full on the 1st of October in the way they want.
Look, it's a very difficult situation. Now, legal solutions do exist, and FIFA can come up with transitional regulations. And we've seen a carve-out with Germany, and we may be able to see a carve-out maybe for England if this matter goes to court and there's a lot of issues why we need to reseat, we were disadvantaged, etc. So there can be carve-outs, regulatory carve-outs for different countries. We've seen in Germany, we see Italy and France have different regimes. So FIFA can deal with those legally. Maybe have to go to the FIFA Council, an urgent meeting, which I don't know if that can be planned so soon. But then on the other side, we've got legal cases as well. So there are other implications there. We had the PROFA outcome, which favoured FIFA. We've got current litigation, which may favour some agents, or we don't know it has in Germany. We don't know what Rule K is going to decide in England, although that is a national dispute between the English FA and the agents or the big four agencies. But then you've got the other side. A lot of football associations around the world have done a great job with this. And the candidates who passed the exam in April, the legacy agents, the ones that had license pre-2015, before the regulations of working with intermediaries came on, the ones that got their license, over 1,000, maybe 2,000, want to get on with it as well. You've got a lot of issues here. Probably the best solution, if the English matter ends up in court or the FA wants to deal with it, is a transitional arrangement dealing with these agent candidates and maybe a carve out for those who the technology didn't work or the exam just was not viable. However, I think FIFA would want to proceed on the 1st of October. What I'm hearing, most FAs are adopting their national football age regulations as well. So it's going to be very, very difficult. The legal approach will be by maybe exception or transition. But however, worldwide, there's a lot of agents ready to go. So it's an interesting next couple of weeks, as you say, Jonathan. And we see a situation where there's a lot of inconsistencies. And I'll just come to light. There's also concerns about the exam itself. I read somewhere that people prepared on the 9 major themes, but the questions didn't reflect all those, especially the RSTP or the FIFA Football Agent Regulations. And a lot of people are concerned about their exam outcome. So it's very, very interesting where this is all going to lead. And one other interesting issue that came, and this is on Twitter, I don't know if it's verified, but this is like a curveball out there. There was a post about a national football association from Africa, I would say Southern Africa, about an agent passing on the day of the exam. It's unclear whether they sat the exam this week. I assume they did because the post is quite current. But this is actually another inconsistency and another concern in terms of the candidate notification procedure, because around the world, most people are waiting for the result next week. Here we have a little scenario where someone passed on the same day. I don't know how that is viable, but that's a post out there, Jonathan.
I don't think it's even possible. And some people may even raise questions as to whether something untoward might have happened in that case. As the only people who can confirm for definite whether a candidate has passed or failed is FIFA. Not, to my awareness, the national FA. So I don't know who made the statements of success. A key thing for me, Peter, in the process, as well as consistency, is fairness. We want the best people for the industry. Yes, we want those with the right professional and ethical values, but also those with the necessary and adequate knowledge of the agent's world, the agency regulations. One candidate shouldn't have an advantage over another based on where they sit the exam, who they are, or anything of that nature. And likewise, another candidate shouldn't be disadvantaged because of the likes of technical issues or the process. So shouldn't questions be asked when we see photos on social media from inside the exam rooms, or even worse still, photos of exam screens with questions on? After all, we've already established phones are amongst other things that are banned from the exam. FIFA specifically published a document detailing the exam rules. Are these being consistently and fairly applied, or are we seeing rules violated or viewed as inappropriate? How are FIFA ensuring consistency? And in terms of that, how are they ensuring fairness?
Yeah, I mean, here at the Agents Angle, me and you joined are all about fairness, transparency, honesty, and making sure the due process or natural justice is available for everyone. And those concepts are legal, of course, some of those. But at the end of the day, it's fairness for all the candidates who have got businesses and want to work under a license to have a proper and fair approach to the exam. Now, I don't want to analyze this too much. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks, we'll know a little bit about what's going on. I want to finish a bit of on a lighter note. And then I've got some breaking news that's just come in, because we just mentioned the English National Football Agent Regulations and the Rule K arbitration. But first, in terms of Demi, one of our guests from Nigeria, I just want to quickly mention that he mentioned a couple of ex-players sat the exam. And one of them, I can confirm, was an ex-Super Eagle or Nigerian international striker, Yakubu Agyenbeni. So he's hoping to get his license. And in terms of breaking news, I've got some very interesting news from Japan. They've released the draft of their National Football Agent Regulations, which probably end up being the final draft. A lot of listeners will know this, that in terms of a club agent, you can have unlimited representative agreement in terms of the time, unlike with a player where it's 2 years. In Japan, they've also seemed to have put a two-year limit of agents, how long they can represent the club under a representative agreement. That's
a good move.
It's a very interesting pivot. Yeah, that's a very interesting pivot. And I think I'm in favor of that. That will allow more transparency with clubs. The other interesting change is, as we know, under $200,000 US, the player can have the club pay the agent their commission or fees, but not over $200,000 USD. However, in Japan, maybe because the salaries are a bit lower, a lot of salaries in the J League are not 200,000 or above. The Japanese version of the National Football Agent Regulations say that in that case, the player has to pay. So it seems like the player has to pay the agent in Japan. That's a bit of a different move. They're just a couple of the changes.
I think,
and I'm sure we're going to look at that.
Peter, sorry, Jonathan. Can I just come in on that one? That's a specific area that is still open to a lot of interpretation, because FIFA have left the door open somewhat in some of the commentary and also some of the regulations in terms of who actually pays. Now, is it a payment on behalf? We still need to clarify that. And that's going to change between nations. And I think it's going to change over the next couple of weeks.
It is. The 30th of September 2023 is the deadline for member associations to introduce the National Football Agent Regulations, or an NFAR. So the next 2 weeks will be very interesting for us. This show has been a little bit off the cuff for our listeners due to what happened with the exam. We're actually planning something else, but we have to cover this ground because it's really taken over the Twitter universe, LinkedIn. It's been the hot issue with the media, as you mentioned earlier, Jonathan. So please subscribe to our podcast, leave a review on all the channels. And Jonathan?
Yeah, so until next week, folks, when the football world will no doubt be even further mired in a swamp of uncertainty over FFAR. Take care of yourselves. And to all those candidates who sat the exam this last week and have put in the hard work, best of luck with your results.
Yes, good luck to everyone with their results. Let's all stay positive. And farewell from me.
The purpose of the Agents Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.